This is always a very interesting topic. What happens after death? One of the reasons that it is an interesting topic is that it doesn't, when we think of what happens after death in the general population, it is certainly quite different than what you will hear as the theosophical perception is, the philosophical ideas of what is life after death. So most people with whose upbringing were the straight line religious affiliations have numerous ideas about what is death. Now, some people feel as though when you die, that's it, there's nothing more. Some people feel as though they might lose their soul. There's just a whole myriad of ideas that can be offered from straight line religion. But the philosophy puts forth the ideas that none of these is correct. So we look at the idea that life and death are cycles. That is what this month's topic is regarding cycles. So the cycle of life and death is not the end. It's actually, one can look at it as being a beginning of sorts. So what happens then when the body dies? Well, when we're looking at this idea of cycles and cyclic law, the cycle is we're born, we age, we get older, and then we die. But what happens at that moment of death? So when death occurs, all the forces of the body and mind rush to the brain. Physicians may pronounce the person dead, the person may look dead, but what happens is that the entire life that was just lived becomes imprinted on the brain. All, as we said, all the forces and the mind ideas all rush to the brain. So it may seem that the person has died, but the physical body may have died, but the real man is busy in the brain. And we call this a review. So what is this review? The review is that what that entire current life has experienced. And it's not just done in a general form. It is down to the details. It could be, people that have, come by us on the periphery. It is every single thing that has ever happened or that person came across. And it isn't until this review is done, and when the review is done, the life imprinted, it goes onto the inner man. And at that point, the person is then truly gone. It takes, they say, about 12 hours for this to occur. And it is suggested, if possible, that the body just lies at rest undisturbed for those 12 hours to allow this process to occur undisturbed. So one thing that we do need to bring forth is this idea of the sevenfold nature of man. Because these, when we're looking at after death states, it does, the sevenfold nature of man definitely comes into play. So after the death of the body begins to disintegrate. The life force begin, you know, leaves, it begins to dissipate as well. So what is left then of the lower perishable ideas of the body is kama and the astral. And these join forth together, and the astral body and the passions of the desires, as we said, they remain and they form what is known as the kama rupa, kama being the passions and desires. And that is the fourth of that sevenfold nature, rupa meaning body. So at this point, what is Kamaloka? Kamaloka is where the that Kamarupa goes to, the astral body and Kama go to. And is that a place? Well, Mr. Crosby does call it a place. He says, is the Kamalokic plane, is it part of the astral plane? He says it is. We don't go to any particular locality to reach it any more than we go anywhere in our dreaming state. Simply, we are in that state, and Kamaloka is like the dreaming state in that it is temporary. When the energy that is caused the dreams, whether good or bad, is used up, the man goes into his nature as a person. And the astral, when we're looking at the astral plane, the astral substance surrounds the earth to an appreciable distance. It's composed of the physical and psychical emanations of the earth. But it is metaphysical so far as the consciousness of the person involved in it is concerned. So what happens then, initially the higher triad of mind or manas, buddhi or spiritual soul, and spirit or atma, they go together with kama, with the passions and desires, and the astral body. They go into this place, so to speak, known as Kamaloka. And almost immediately, the higher triad separates and goes to Devakan, which my partner will discuss. And this sometimes takes longer or shorter time, depending upon how materialistic the person is. But in the meantime, then, this Kamarupa is sloughing off all the lower ideas and feelings that that person has had during that present life. This type of thinking and feeling has no place in Devakan. It has to get rid of it in some way. So this happens, the first stage after death, in Kamaloka. So The sloughing off will, you know, we can't give a time, but it depends upon, of course, how much the person is attached to earthly life, to the material way of living. And it has to deal with, it has to get rid of these thoughts and feelings in order for it, because the it has no business in Devakan. The soul may be, as we said, may be detained in Kamaloka by the enormous force of some unsatisfied desire. But if the person was pure-minded and of high aspirations, the separation of the principles on that plane is soon completed, permitting the higher triad to go to Devakan. So we are responsible still for our actions in the of the Kama Rupa. So the struggle in Kamaloka depends, as we said, on the strength of attachment that the Kama Rupa has to the physical body. The more materialistic, the stronger the struggle. If more spiritual, then the struggle is varied according to the strength of their spiritual aspirations. The more spiritual, the quicker the assimilation into Devakan. And it is suggested that if the body is cremated, this attachment to that body is lessened and the astral will dissipate quicker. So just to end, then, what is the practical use of knowing what the different areas are, the ideas of life after death? Because this is the process, going, you know, having the review, then going into Kamaloka, and then Devakan. It is the process of these three that have to occur in order for the human to progress along their spiritual path. This is the whole idea of reincarnation, of evolution, because by sloughing off these lower tendencies and assimilating the higher ones in Devakan, then this is the process. This is how we work through what has happened in the previous life. And it is also said that by having the review in the evening, while you're in, you know, kind of calming down and lying in bed and going through the thoughts of the day, it is said that by doing it on a daily basis, that it will make that stay in Kamaloka a quicker experience. So we'll go on to my co-panelist, then we'll hear what happens in Devakan.
You know, once upon a time back in the 70s, I was really confused about why the after-death states, which I then considered so solemn and so somber and sorrowful, why they would be included in this December period of festival of lights and celebrations and this outpouring of altruism and all things good. And it's been a chuckle over all these decades, because finally, looking at the after-death states as just one more portion of the experience of an incarnation has become very comforting, very hopeful. a celebration of the return of light and life and the return of potentiality and evolution. So it's been quite a journey. Frequently, when we deliver the fundamentals, you'll hear someone allude to the analogy of abstract universal motion. And in the popular culture, as my partner just said, there's the notion of a sudden ending. And some even hold that physical death is the end of everything, that it's an accident. There isn't any law, there's no symmetry, there's no cause and effect, no purpose. But the student of theosophy learns that the incarnation that we're experiencing today together does not end with the physical death. It proceeds as an incarnation in an effect state, if you will, through Kamaloka, through Devakan, and then finally in the prenatal emergence, if you will. Judge wrote that life is not the result of the organs, nor is it gone when the body dissolves. It is a universally pervasive principle. It permeates the globe and every being and every object on it. It works unceasingly on and around us, pulsing through us forever. So there we have a treatment of universal abstract motion, pulsation, vibration, life, force, energy, however we want to try to use our English to describe it. And as my partner just pointed out, daily practices, as at the end of a day, with a review of the day and a calming of the brain and the body before deep sleep, that is a use of imagination, our king faculty, and a use of will and self-discipline that is very practical and is actually analogous to what needs to go on in these other stages of the incarnation that unfold in these effect states. Devakan has been called many things, a state, a stage of life in the human experience. It is said to be remedial. It is said to be restful, beneficial. It is a state in which the quote, better angel of man is divided from the brute side, the animal side of man, and the lower elements. In Devakan, there is a freedom of all the skandhas from all the lower aspects of these seven principles that we use in our conscious waking states. Life as eternal consciousness continues on in Devakan without that lower quaternary, and it plays out the finest, the highest aspects of the incarnation at hand. Mental, moral forces need to be dissipated or exhausted at their plane, in their state, much as the lowest aspects of passions and desires, of anxieties and woes, that plays out in Kamaloka. But in the assimilation effect state of Devakan, it's the very highest essence that begins to unravel, begins to dissipate, begins to lose its endurance and its force, begins to lose the attachment of the electromagnetic strands to this eternal pilgrim, this high soul that is finishing that incarnation. Devakan is said to be called the place of the gods, a heaven state. It's definitely an interlude between two births. And in a certain way, it is still Maya. It is still an illusion, an effect state that was created by the soul while in the conscious living body, the entire sevenfold entity during the incarnation. It's an illusion because the soul continues in Devakan to rid itself of the attachment to the loftiest aspirations, the highest dreams, the most altruistic, all-inclusive, unconditional love imaginable. Anything that was engendered during the earth life still needs to be dissipated and swept away. Much like, I guess, we watch the dying embers in a fireplace and we're aware of all the different stages that goes through those dying embers as the force and the fire and the light and the heat begins to lessen. The endurance dwindles until it's on a whole different level. So in Devakan, the upper triad, the Atma, Buddhi, Manas, the Buddhi monastic entity, the eternal pilgrim, is freed of the astral ties, it is freed of the physical encasement, and there are still the loftiest of psychic energies that we can imagine that are being spent. Why is Devakan so necessary for so many, if not all, souls in incarnation? Well, we read that it's about the ignorance of the true nature of man, that we in our daily lives become so hopeful, optimistic, confident, so attached to our dreams for the globe and for the local vicinity near us that we need to recharge. We need to, come back to rest. It's as though we're on fire with these aspirations, and soul needs to retreat into its eternal stance of calm and oneness, and be needs to recenter, regroup in some ways, so that then the new incarnation that will begin again at the end of Devakan will have a fresh source of energy. We're told that in Devakan, we use a thought body that is extremely ethereal. It is not the Kama Rupa at all. It is a finer tinsel quality of the astral or the Akashic substance. It's a means or a vehicle of the soul to experience in a subjective state, in a dream state, where all these aspirations can come to fruition and can come to realization of a kind. And that in this intense duration of expenditure, the soul is also assimilating the highest lessons learned, and assimilating into its eternal Buddhi nature, any wisdom gained, anything that could be transformative, could be used to transmute future lives and life. It is said that the entire after-death state, on average, is about 1,500 years. We could do individual studies on the pattern of 1,500-year cycle of national developments when souls come back into incarnation together. We can begin to see patterns there. But what draws the most soul back out of Devakan, completing that particular phase or state of consciousness, to move back into an active, manifested incarnation anew? Well, there is something the philosophy talks about, and that is tanha, thirst for life. It is the pull, it is the magnetic force that is lodged in the skandhas that are inherent in all be beings. these skandhas, these bundles of tendencies, are such that we have created them as soul in past incarnations. They reactivate, they begin to pull the soul back out of the devachanic state. So as the magnetic ties to the aspirations begin to dissipate, tanha is that force which operates according to law and cycle and pulls the soul back again into re-embodiment, or what we call in the human state, reincarnation. So in this dream or aspiration, where each of those are expanded, fulfilled, and then assimilated, there are entities in Devakon, souls in Devakon, who are finishing their incarnation, and they still have certain spiritual powers of absolute, all-inclusive, unconditional love, universal love. And it is said that certain very strong souls, strong in the Buddhi monastic aspect of reality, that they can generate love and force that can affect their beloveds back on the globe, both morally and materialistically. This student would imagine that soul is such a one that's pretty far progressed. In terms of reaching souls in Devakon in this heaven state, the philosophy advises against all efforts to try to contact soul in after-death states. And it is said that it is only adepts, very, very high, masterful Mahatmas, great souls, that can reach the Devakani and begin to arouse them or to activate them. And how would that happen in a law of cycle? Well, if the soul that has departed physical life was such a one that had this incredible aspiration to assist Master's cause, to promote the Theosophical movement, to work universally for the good of all, each and every soul, no matter how heinous their activities are. That Devakani, with that kind of aspiration, has set up the right conditions under cyclic law that they might be helped out of Devakon a bit early. The endurance is not as necessary, and they can be invited back into incarnation because they come back with purpose, with intent, with aspiration to continue their work in assisting all souls in all forms in the evolutionary process. So, other than that, frankly, where we might see our neighbors and friends visiting mediums or seances or whatever, there's a huge gulf between the Devakonic state and life on the globe in the earth. We might use our daily deep sleep as an analogy to understand this. We know that if we sit in the evening for a review of the day and we sit in a meditative source of holding fine ideas and aspirations, we move through the dream states in far more peaceful format. We enter a deep sleep state, it is said, where we commune with all soul, only to emerge again back through the dream states into conscious awakening in the morning. There's a huge gulf between the reality of soul life in deep sleep and the reality and the illusions of soul life in dream states and in conscious life. But we are promised that upon the emergence from Devakon, each soul has a moment of clear seeing where there is this moment where we see clearly the Dharma of the coming incarnation. we understand and can oversee the task at hand before we proceed on into the astral and physical frame of the new baby that's been prepared for the new incarnation. I bet you came with all sorts of thoughts and comments on this particular topic. Theosophy Hall, you have to unmute.
All right, go ahead.
So this Devicon, the place in the gods, as it were, where we have all these lofty aspirations, why does it take an average of 1,500 years if we live, say, 80 years on this earth? That's almost 20 times as long. I know we can't be strictly linear, but yet that's quite a long time to mull over in our minds all those wonderful, lofty ideas, is it not?
Well, it's on average 1,500 years, and that includes the tremendous materialists who invest their entire incarnation in mundane global anxieties, worries, hopes, dreams, desires, passions. And we know scientifically, probably physicians could prove it to us very clearly, that there is a very limited range of sound and sight that we're aware of when in these physical frames. The greater experience of life is far more all-inclusive. And as my partner explained in that 12-hour review, every single second in this pilgrim's journey of one incarnation is rewound, probably through the astral brain, and it's rewound and re-experienced for use in the after-death states. So, no matter how fleeting a thought that we may have, depending on how we energize these fleeting thoughts that we may have, no matter how bland we think we are, we're enmeshed in physical desires and in the astral and in the collective. And for the deep, solid materialist, on average, 1,500 years is needed to unwind or devolve all of that back to a starting point again. Certainly, it is said with a rank materialist, that time is actually spent in Kamaloka. They pass through Devakon almost comatose with none of the benefits of the Devakonic state because they've been so engrossed in the base brute side of human existence. And then they come out the other end.
Mr. Crosby actually says that the 1,500 years is a combination of Kamaloka and Devakon.
Yes.
But this student doesn't know if we've ever actually, if it's in writing anywhere, why it takes. I mean, how did that number come up?
Well,
That I'm not sure about.
if we have the position that theosophy is the acquired wisdom of the ages, and that there are great souls that know these patterns of duration, that understand that our artificial concept of solar time or lunar time is an artifice. It is a shorthand to finding ourselves in place, in location, in relationship with each other. They've made observations across the centuries. And in the literature, if you do have questions about how they came up with 1,500 years average, there are many, many articles, derivative articles by students, where they studied the recurrence of civilizations. And it may very well be that next Sunday's panel gets into that aspect, that as citizens of the Americas, we can sit with any really good history source of the Roman Empire and be absolutely amazed at the tremendous parallels between the development and fall of the Roman Empire and what's going on in the Americas right now, especially in the United States. So there are many, many evidences of these 1500 year cycles where apparently masses of souls come back in together in response to the pool of Tanha that they share in common.
We have a follow up here.
So we could also pass through Devicon rather rapidly.
Yes.
And we're even understand we can be, in a sense, called out of it because of a strong desire to help humanity. So we might not get that long rest. We might be called back. Is that
in the literature that by the karmic conditions that we as soul have set up, we may have a very short duration, a very short need for this aspect of dissipating energies. And in fact, practical advice is if we can set up periods of meditation daily, in the morning, first thing, to revisit the notion of being at one with the abstract and at one with the universe and at one with each other, and set a tone for the day, almost an echo of that moment of clear seeing at the beginning of an incarnation. Then we proceed through the course of the day, trying to be as critically conscious and aware and alert as possible, making every endeavor to be metacognitive, analyzing thought, watching what we're doing, perfecting our motives, and then close the day at bedtime with a really solid review, not judgmental, just a review of the day. What can I assimilate from the day? What can be learned? What are the lowest, basest desires and reactions that I don't need, I don't want? What are those that I could dissipate? What aspirations did I have during the day? And how might I invest them in my deep sleep states in order to garner more wisdom to bring these high aspirations and hopes to fruition the next day? Again, selflessly. Selflessly is the key. In that way, that daily practice means we've been creating a little bit of the Devaconic state, a little bit of the Kamalokic state through the course of each day of our lives. How would that affect our after-death states? I bet it would shorten it big time.
Mm-hmm.
SL?
Of course, many people wonder and hope that in the after-death state that they will be joined again with their loved ones and spend eternity or whatever with them. What does Theosophy teach about the experience of the ego in that after-death heaven state? Do we in fact objectively communicate and relate with those we love in that state, or is it some other kind of experience?
Well, it is said that an example is given in the literature about how a mother can develop a sense of a child who is maybe has an alcohol or a drug problem, but they will see that person in Devakon as being very healthy and happy. And as the second panelist said that the love, since love is like a universal emotion, that it can affect the loved one back on Earth. They can sense it. So that love can affect the person, and in Devakon, the soul will only see what is the best for their loved ones.
So the point to this is that there's no objective reality in Devakon. So in the example given of a mother with an intense love for her child, it is said that there may be a short period of time immediately after the physical death when such a mother who has unfinished business with a beloved child may be able to contact that child very, very briefly in a dream or in deep sleep or whatever. But once this entire process begins, the entire aspect of the incarnation that is an effect state that is subjective, there's no way for any living entity in a physical frame on the earth to enter the state and to begin to interact. There's no conversations, etc. It's probably helpful for those of us who have family and friends that are now beginning to lose the baby boomer generation to reiterate the heaven state to them. It may be comforting for them to hear suggestions of your mother's now in her heaven state. Just imagine what her wishes, her dreams and aspirations were, and imagine the bliss of seeing those or feeling that those are all coming true and playing out. And that might be a degree of comfort, but there's no objective interactive state like there is on the conscious plane on this globe. SL again?
We're trying to think of a way of understanding why those experience in Devakon, the fulfillment and the expenditure of all that higher psychic energy might be more enduring and take more time. And so it came to us that in our daily relationships with those we love, we may experience temporarily very low forms of passions, maybe moments of fear or anger or resentment, but they pretty much dissipate. And what seems to endure for a much longer time is our genuine love and compassion and feeling it. It seems to survive all that in a long relationship. So we know from our experience that the endurance, the energy, the force of our higher psychic feelings, our love, is much longer, is much stronger, even in this life. So why shouldn't it be even longer and take longer time to experience in the after-death states when we don't have these temporary lower distractions?
And there we have an example of reasoned faith, if you will. You know, that's the process of being a student. Having a question, looking around life for examples that might shed some light on that scenario, and looking for analogies and correspondences to try to understand if law is universal, if there are these tremendous laws of cycles, then there has to be a commonality in all stages of an incarnation, whether it is visible or invisible. MDW.
Well, the way of teaching in the East is by presenting the student with the seed idea. And then the student is asked to go off and try to assimilate that idea and come back. Well, that seems like what every incarnation is. It's a seed idea, and then we die and we assimilate it and come back. And we hopefully have moved on or moved forward. It reminds us of the very ideas that theosophy talks about of the last 25 years of each century. Since the 1300s, that there has been an impulse towards spiritual knowledge. And then you won't see that again until another 75 years. So that's like a 75-year period in between where we assimilate those ideas. And it seems like that's what we're doing now. We're really assimilating the ideas that manifested, in the last part of the 1900s. So, the seed idea, and then developing it, in our mind and assimilating it. It seems like that's what each incarnation is.
And that's an interesting comment because the seed idea would be akin to that moment of clear thinking just before soul enters, reasserts itself into astral and physical planes. And if we look at some of the theosophical literature, they talk about the seven stages of manhood and the development, and that final aspect of the elder years, where in some cultures, individuals get permission to leave the family and the profession and then retreat for a final period of contemplation and spiritual pursuits. And again, that would be akin to this collective force field of the last 25 years of every century. We can find so many analogies in history, in science, and philosophy, all over the place. So many analogies that flesh out these philosophical teachings.
And one of the interesting things is if we look at what is practical from these teachings, especially the topic for today. So how can we practically look at when we're talking about planting these seeds ideas, what can we do practically speaking to implant that into, impress it into our souls. And it's identifying the high spiritual feelings and ideas and being mindful of what we read and what kind of movies and shows, are they of a violent nature or, it should be of a higher idea because then we can impress that seed into our nature and carry it through our lives and even into those after-death states. Making Kamaloka a shorter period and getting the full rest and maybe getting pulled out of Devakan to reap the, we can say reap the rewards of what we've been impressing and planting those seeds so that we can see them come to fruition.
So
The course of the ego through a long series of life is and sometimes likened to the thread soul or a necklace where each life is like a pearl on that long strand. And it reminded us that when you go, when you open up a clam, in some of those clams you see a pearl. But that pearl began as a grain of sand, an imperfection. And we're told in the philosophy that perfection develops because of imperfection. It develops around imperfection. So this life we have, which seems to be imperfect and challenging, is exactly what we need to learn and generate those forces that help perfect our character, that we assimilate in Devakan. It's our opportunity to develop that pearl. And like I said, we can do it in this life consciously, or it will happen anyway in the course of evolution in Devakan.
So the irritant becomes the pearl. That's an interesting idea to sit with in meditation, isn't it? And
So, oh, go ahead. We're so
if we
sorry.
find ourselves in a family, a town, a culture, a society, and we feel that we've been irritated by some development or some set of events, then there's the perfect instance. An invitation, if you will, to examine the irritant, to understand it as best we can, and then to transmute it into the trigger for a soulful response, a self-reflective response. We can create that pearl, and then we can gift it to one and all.
And Mr. Judge actually says, he gives a comparison between an opportunity and an obstacle, that it's our perception about what we're able to do, what we're thinking, is if we turn that obstacle into an opportunity. So, MDW, we have 1 minute.
This word tanha, it seems that it means karma, because I guess without any karma, you don't have to, we don't have to come back anymore.
Well, it would seem that karma, tanha, and the skandhas are a study unto themselves, and our time is up. But boy, there's a seed idea that we can proceed with, isn't it?
So, hope to see you all on Wednesday.